that's a vibe. She wanna vibe, that's a vibe. Yeah, that's a vibe. It's a vibe, that's a vibe. Yeah, that's a vibe. Oh, it's a vibe, and that's a vibe. Yeah, that's a vibe. She wanna vibe.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Season 4, Episode 5 of Power T Talk. We just got done with our draft earlier this week. We did our Big 10, Big 12 preview earlier this week. And now we're going to do the SEC preview and the Pac-12 preview in one episode. So we're going to talk a little bit more about the SEC. It's a little bit more relevant to our Power T talking. But it's also, we know more about it, and we're going to encounter these teams a lot. Then we're going to throw it over to the other coast. We're going to talk about the Pac-12. We're going to talk about the guys we drafted that are so good. We're going to talk about whether Washington can repeat their success. The most important thing in the SEC is seeing if there's a route to Tennessee winning the East, getting on the dance floor in the SEC title game. We're going to talk about that. We're going to, of course, talk about Alabama. We kind of can't avoid it. We're going to talk about hot seat coaches. We're going to talk about who we're buying, who we're selling of the young guys in this conference. We're going to do a little bit of quick twitch and pick some guys. Then when we go to the Pac-12, we're going to talk about who the best running backs are. We're going to talk about Washington. We're going to talk about how T. Martin's career has developed through USC. And then we're going to, again, talk about our favorite players and our favorite young guys, just like we have on the other previews. Zach, how are you doing? Are you ready to talk some SEC football?
I am ready to talk some SEC football. I'm super excited to talk about it. We mentioned this pre-show as we were kind of talking here. If we were doing like a Big Ten podcast as like Michigan, Ohio State fans, we probably wouldn't talk about the SEC much because of how much Alabama has dominated the last, you know, decade basically.
Yeah, like the dirty little secret right now is that the SEC is a little bit boring. There's some conversations we can have about the East, but the real question is, can anyone beat Alabama? And I hate putting them up on a pedestal like that because I think there have been years where people throw this question out when clearly they're vulnerable. But right now, I'm not really sure who's beating them. In your opinion, what are Alabama's biggest weaknesses coming into the year?
I think their biggest weakness right now is just the passing game of Jalen Hurts. You know, Hurts put up really good numbers. He was fantastic last year. I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, he wasn't any good or anything. That'd be lying. But there are weaknesses in his game that I think will affect Alabama unless he improves there. I'm concerned about mainly he can throw a pretty good deep ball and he gets the ball quickly out. But his intermediate, that 10 to 20 yard range, he really struggled. I mean, you could just tell watching it. I mean, yeah, he completed, you know, right around 60% of his passes. I think it was 63% to be exact. But really, he wasn't as impressive in the intermediate passing game as maybe like Blake Sims or definitely A.J. McCarron. And I think that's their biggest weakness right now because, you know, Clemson was able – I mean, Clemson didn't really stop them, but they were able to at least slow him down a little bit because of that.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about – one of the questions we talked about was – what is Calvin Ridley now? He had such a monster freshman year, and then he tapered off a little bit. Well, I think a big difference is that, like you said, Hurts struggles a little bit at that middle level of the passing game. He throws a pretty deep ball, and he obviously can run around like crazy. He had almost 1,000 rushing yards. But I think that is kind of what explains the difference where Ridley had a little bit less volume. I still think Ridley's going to get high volume, but I don't know how well they can attack multiple levels of the defense when they don't have O.J. Howard anymore. And oddly enough, he actually didn't put up great regular season numbers, but he was a threat. And then their other receivers aren't thoroughly proven besides Ridley. So they're really going to need Hurts to be a little bit more precise. And I kind of started to push back against all the Hurts Heisman talk last year because he simply wasn't good enough as a quarterback. But the team overall is absolutely good enough. Are there any concerns on the defensive end for you? Because we know that they just constantly crank out these great defenses. Is there one part of this defense that you think is the biggest weakness or something they need to replace?
I don't think they have a good pass rush, at least coming back. I mean, listen to the guys they lost last year off this pass rush. They lose Reuben Foster, who had 5 sacks. Jonathan Allen, first round pick, 10.5. They lose Ryan Anderson with 9. They lose Tim Williams, who also had 9. Davlin Tomlinson had 3. We just assume because they have all the 5 stars and it's Nick Saban that Alabama's going to have a great pass rush. And I think that's fair. I think they've earned that. But if you look, I mean, yeah, they had a great pass rush last year. Their ability to sack the quarterback, they had the 11th best adjusted sack rate in the country. You know, they definitely got as much pressure as anyone. But if you look at their defensive line havoc rate, it was only 4.2%. That was 76 in the country. Now, their linebackers were second in the country. But still, they need to find a real good pass rusher. I mean, I'm sure Daron Payne can be that guy. But maybe Sean Dion Hamilton. But they're going to have to find somebody. I don't think it's a given that they're going to have a great pass rush this year.
Yeah, and that's something that they rely on. I mean, you talk about Ryan Anderson and Tim Williams. Those guys absolutely controlled some games for them. And they become incredibly important because that's how they just absolutely overwhelm teams, is not only are they after you with their run game and Jalen Hurts is running around a little bit, but they're all over you coming off the edge. And that's when you can't overcome that at a certain point when they can throw Tim Williams at you. Reuben Foster's flying all over the field. Those guys are gone, and Jonathan Allen was one of the best defensive ends in the country, and he's gone. They're really relying on Deshaun Hand, who is just like suddenly a senior. It seems like the other day that they landed him late in the recruiting process. He's a big guy. He can play that 3-4 defensive end. They have the guys in place, and they all have a lot of stars next to their name. If I could pick one guy to emerge, I think Rashawn Evans is finally going to kind of come into his own. He came in. He's an athletic freak. I think that he kind of takes the mantle from Reuben Foster, where he's not playing on the edge, but he's really fast and he flies all over the field. And I think he's going to end up with some tackles for loss and some sacks. And Sean Dion Hamilton, those two beside each other, I think that is kind of the strength of this defense besides their secondary. Within their front 7, I think those two linebackers keep them afloat.
I could be remembering this wrong, but Deshaun Hand, I felt, was going to top 10 or 15 players in the country coming out, and he hasn't lived up to the hype either. And they need a big year from him because they're going to miss Williams and Anderson. Both were outside linebackers. They're going to miss them. Jonathan Allen, as a 3-4 defensive end, was dominant. And Reuben Foster could blitz the quarterback up the middle as well as anyone in the country. They're going to get nickel. You know, they blitz as well as anyone. They're going to get sacks from some nickel backs, from safeties. Positions like that. I'm not going to say it's going to be bad, but Clemson picked them apart last year. And you could see maybe Jared Stidham could pick them apart potentially. Maybe if Quentin Dormady improves, maybe he could have a good game against them with a veteran offensive line. So I think Alabama really needs to find a pass rush and find a couple guys who can replace the production they lost. It's not easy to replace 30-something sacks.
No, it's not. And Deshaun Hand was the number 5 player in the country the year they got Cam Robinson. So he's been around a while. He's prototypical size. He's what they want, but he needs to start producing, and he hasn't yet. We know how Alabama works. He probably will, but they need him to. Switching back to the offense real quick before we move throughout the conference, do you think they're going to miss Lane Kiffin at all? I mean, I know Nick Saban's not going to miss Lane Kiffin the guy, but do you think they're going to miss Lane Kiffin the mind on offense?
I think they will a little bit. I think they're going to miss the innovation because Kiffin just could really, really change up how the offense worked. Like, I mean, Alabama ran a spread option offense last year, basically. And Kiffin's innovation and his ability to dictate the flow and the pace of the offensive game, they're going to miss that. Brian Daboll is a good position coach, but I don't know if he's going to be a great offense coordinator. I think he was brought in to help out with the passing game, but he's not exactly the guy that you would think automatic great coordinator, obviously.
Yeah, they have so much talent in place that I think it'll be okay, but it's going to be interesting to see how the offense looks different with this new coordinator because it's not Lane Kiffin, and they play one of the best defenses in the country early in the season. It's one against Florida State. It's one of only a few games I think they could lose this year, so it's going to be interesting to see if they come out ready for that. Flipping to the East real quick, we're going to end up coming back and talking about Alabama and other teams in the West again, but who do you think is the best team in the East? And I'll kind of run through the candidates real quick, and then we can talk about them. the questions you presented to me with these teams was, they were, will Tennessee find a defense? And we've talked about that. Does Florida have enough at quarterback? Do we know who Jim McElwain's using? Is Missouri a legitimate contender? Is Drew Locke for real? Is that offense back? Is Jamon Moore a star receiver? And then right now, are you buying the Kirby Smart stock? And wrapped up in that question, are you buying the Georgia stock? So those are kind of the four contenders. And out of those, you're going to find the best team in the East. But who are you picking? Whose question marks are you most comfortable with?
So talent-wise and quarterback-wise, I think Georgia should easily win the East. Easily win the East. I think if you look at the returning starters they have, 17 returning starters, most on the offensive line, all the defensive seniors they have, they should be the returning team. I actually think if I was forced to make a selection, and I don't know if you're forcing me to make one, but if I was going to pick, I'd probably pick Tennessee right now, actually.
So you're going to have to sell me on it a little bit, just because I look at this Georgia roster, and and what I wrote down when I was thinking about this was, it really is a Kirby Smart question, because I would buy Georgia stock this year. They have the returning starters. They have all SEC guy and Dominic Sanders. They have what's the name of the defensive tackle?
Trenton Thompson.
They have all the tools they could possibly want to come back on offense. And we've kind of learned from the past, like when we went through some iffy coaches and we see other iffy coaches around the country, if the roster is right and you still have questions, you got to start questioning the coach. And Kirby can still prove it, but the real question is, can Kirby coach? Because I have faith in Jacob Eason, and God, we know that Nick Chubb and Sony Michel can run all over teams. It's hard for me not to pick Georgia right now.
Can I sway you a little bit for Georgia?
I think you can try to. I mean, I know we beat them last year, but the talent is all back is what worries me.
It is back, but they went 7-5 in the regular season last year. Not only that, and it could have gone the other way because they lost three games by 5 points, but 2-point victory against Nichols, 9-point victory against North Carolina. They scored a late touchdown. Okay. A 3-point victory at Kentucky that required a late touchdown, and then a 1-point victory at Missouri that required a late touchdown. They easily could have been 4-8 or 3-9 last year. Easily. I don't think defensively they're as good as the rankings say they are, and I don't buy Kirby Smart yet as a defensive genius.
That's the thing, is they have Lorenzo Carter, they have Davin Bellamy, they have Dominic Sanders, they have the defensive line intact. Their corners are really, really vulnerable, and they could absolutely get exposed. But the roster is exactly where it needs to be for them. And Kirby Smart really doesn't have any excuses. If he doesn't win the East, I'm not sure he can coach. And I realize that it's not just that's all that – there's going to be other things that go on. There could be injuries. There could be the emergence of other people like Florida's quarterback or Quentin Dormady. But if he doesn't win the East, I think that's a problem for Georgia. I really do.
I do, too, because I think Florida's going to take a step back, losing 9 defensive starters, and they don't have a quarterback. Yeah, I like Tennessee, and I picked them to win the East. And I can do – we can talk about that in a minute, potentially. But I don't trust Kirby Smart and what he brings yet. I don't think their defense is as good as the names on paper. If you look at the production and everything, I just don't. Other than Dominic Sanders, I don't think there's Trent Thompson. I don't think there's a true legitimate NFL defender that I've seen yet. I know Lorenzo Carter and Reggie Carter, they're big names. They're highly recruited, but they haven't shown it yet. And I think Jacob Eason's legit. They obviously have great running backs, but you know, I'm not completely buying the wide receivers yet. And I think the offensive line is still a question mark.
The offensive line is, and obviously, I mean, Easton's still young, but God, he showed some really good signs last year. They should be super excited about him. Interestingly, I think you and I, a lot of times on this podcast, we agree a lot. And I think that the listeners realize that. And part of it is because we both dig into the same types of stats. And we also talk about this stuff a lot. I think one of the biggest disagreements we might have this year is how good Tennessee can be. And I think we need to table that for next week when we preview Georgia Tech. But for now, thinking about this Georgia defense that you're rightfully skeptical of, and so am I, let's look at their schedule. So they play at Notre Dame early. They play App State early. They play at Notre Dame early. They play Mississippi State. They play at Tennessee. They play Florida. They play South Carolina. They play at Auburn. I think the teams I just listed are all teams that can test this defense.
And if the defense at Georgia Tech, too.
And at Georgia Tech. So, yes, I didn't even see that. So, all those teams with Nick Fitzgerald, with Brian Kelly, who I don't like, but he can coach, and App State returns all the guys that gave us trouble last year. And I think South Carolina might have found a decent young quarterback. And we know Auburn can have some offense. If Kirby Smart can't coach, and especially if Kirby Smart can't coach the defense, it's going to be a pretty underwhelming year for them. And then every good player they have is going to be finally gone, and they're really going to have to reload. It's this year, man. Kirby Smart has to win the East.
He does. He's got five defensive seniors starters projected, and I think four projected junior starters on the line. And, I mean, anything under nine wins I think is going to be disappointing. I mean, they play Mississippi State at home as one of their West opponents. That's a break for them. Georgia Tech, it is at Georgia Tech. It is at Notre Dame. Those are two tough games, but Notre Dame was bad last year. Georgia Tech, you know, I don't think anyone's expecting them to compete to win the ACC. I think the thing with Georgia is I think their offense is going to be fine. Their offensive line wasn't good last year, but I think they'll be fine. And I think Jacob Eason has big-time potential, and we'll talk about him a little bit later. But I don't buy their defense. I mean, John Atkins was a big-time five-star recruit. He's not shown much. We talked about, you know, Lorenzo Carter hasn't shown much there. And then I mistake Dalvin Bellamy. I said Reggie. I meant Dalvin Bellamy, big-time recruit, hasn't shown a ton. Their corners aren't big names. I think defensively they're going to have issues again. Their best secondary guy other than Dominic Sanders was Maurice Smith, and he's graduated. I think they're going to have problems next year.
Yeah, and I think rarely do I do this with coaches because I'm very much like anything can happen. There's a range of outcomes. I think if Kirby Smart really struggles, drops that Mississippi State game, loses in Neyland, just doesn't come close to winning the East or doesn't win the East, I think he's got to be on the hot seat. And you start to wonder if it's another one of those Saban assistants that can't actually coach. So thinking about the hot seat, I'm not putting Kirby on it yet, but I want to ask, and you came up with this idea, and I think it's awesome. Are the following coaches still with their schools in 2020? And we kind of want to do this quickly, but we want to put it on the radar because we're going to revisit throughout the season. So we're just going to run through some SEC coaches that we think could be on the hot seat or could go elsewhere. And I think there's some of these guys we'll agree on, but it's going to be interesting to find out. So we'll start with, are these coaches at their schools in 2020? Kevin Sumlin, is he still at Texas A&M?
No, he will be fired after 2017.
So you think after this year he's going to disappoint a little bit, it's not going to be there, and he's done?
I see another 7-5, 8-4 season, and I think that gets him canned. Unfortunately, I think he's a good coach, and I think Texas A&M has higher expectations than they should, but he's got to go at Florida this year. He's got at UCLA on Sunday night, you know, Auburn, Bama. He's got to go at Baton Rouge. That's five right there. Easy losses. Well, not easy losses, but those are five losses that can easily happen.
Yeah, and he's kind of been he was a victim of kind of early success that was unexpected. And then last year he went from like very, very high to ended up not being the season they wanted. I actually think he still will still be there. But if he only wins six or seven games this year, you may be right. Brett Bielema
will also be fired.
I agree with you on this one.
He's only had 1 8-win seasons in 4 years at Arkansas. He came in with higher expectations because of his resume at Wisconsin. I think they're going to struggle. I love Austin Allen's toughness, but I think it'll be a struggle to make a bowl game. They lost Raleigh Williams to injury, unfortunately. Other than Telvin McGee, I don't see really a great defensive player on this team. So I think they're really going to struggle this year. That offensive line, you know, if they could get a good offensive line, he might survive, but he needs 8 or 9 wins in the regular season this year.
Yeah, out of the East, they play at South Carolina and they play Missouri, so not like the cream of the crop necessarily, but still teams that can beat him, and he could easily just not have that great a season.
Plays TCU at home at a conference. It's not going to be an easy game.
No, it's not. Gus Malzahn.
Yes, Gus Malzahn will still be there next year.
I agree with that. I think there was some hot seat last year, and maybe that was justified, but he'll still be there. I think he's going to have another good year. I think everyone's excited about the quarterback he got in there, so I think Gus Malzahn's still there.
Nine wins should put him in the safe spot. You know, if he gets eight, I don't think they'd make a move. I think anything below eight, I think they would probably start looking at other coaches. But if he gets nine, he should be okay. And LSU, I think, is going to be down this year. Ole Miss is definitely going to be down. Mississippi State and Arkansas don't have the talent level that Auburn does. He should probably win nine games without too much concern.
Yeah, they've also got some talent. Like,
they play Clemson in Clemson, so they'll probably lose. But if they lose to Clemson, only two other SEC losses, I mean, Clemson, Alabama, they should beat everyone else on their schedule, though.
I'm going to go a little bit out of order from what you sent me because I think the others are good to have at the tail end. Jim McElwain.
Okay, so these next three are guys we don't think, barring a losing season, are going to be fired, even if they win just six or seven games. Correct? That's what we're saying here.
Yeah, I mean, one is so early on. But...
yeah. So Jim McElwain, will he be at the school in 2020? I don't think so. I think he'll need to win an SEC title. Florida's not afraid to make a move. And I know they got a new AD in there. Jeremy Foley's gone. Do you think Florida in the next 2 years can win the SEC? I don't. And then now you're talking, you know, that's what, 4 years without an SEC title, even with the SEC East, especially if Kirby Smart can live up to the hype, if Butch Jones can maybe, you know, with this new improved coaching staff. I think it's possible McElwain could be fired after 2019.
I actually think he'll still be there. This could be kind of a hinge season because he could lose to Michigan. He's probably going to lose to Florida State. He's going to lose to one or two of Tennessee, LSU, and Georgia. And that still leaves some other funky SEC games where you could lose, especially if you don't have a quarterback. He got some goodwill early because he beat Tennessee and he got him to Atlanta a couple times. But if they're really thinking someone that can get them over the hump to win a title, if that's the mark, then I don't think he can make it because I don't know if they can win an SEC title given how much defensive people are just running for the exits in the past few years.
And I know he had Will Grier who looked great, but he didn't recruit Will Grier. And I know he's got a five-star coming up in 2018. I think it's highly concerning, though, that the last 2 years they haven't shown that they have a good quarterback. And this year, he not only is he not named a starter, he mentioned that all three could probably play. That's not a good sign.
Yeah, that's when you have zero quarterbacks. We know that.
Yeah, we've been there. It's not pretty.
Ed Orgeron.
No. He might be gone after 2018, honestly.
I could actually see the same thing. He was the easiest answer for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think if he does have a good year this year, like if he pulls off a win against Alabama or he's second in the West above Auburn, that's going to buy him a lot of goodwill because people already like him. But we talked about it before. He's not a good coach. I think it could easily be a pretty quick wake-up call to, oh, okay, we need to go get somebody else. LSU football deserves a better coach than this. And they just move on after kind of a weird transition out of Les Miles.
The one thing that can save him, Daniel, is he's got two fantastic coordinators. And so if they stay for a couple of years, I could see him have a 9-win, nine, maybe even a 10-win season with a bowl victory in there to help that out. But if Aranda maybe leaves to take a job next year, or Canada leaves to take a job in a couple of years, I just don't see Orgeron lasting, you know, 3 years or 4 years at this point.
And then the final one, and then I have actually a bonus question that we haven't talked about. Will Butch Jones still be at Tennessee in 2020?
Can I say with a caveat, would that be okay? I know that's kind of a wimpy answer, but if he wins an SEC East in 2018 or 2019, yes.
Yeah, I think he just needs to win the East 1 year. I mean, I know that it's been kind of funky.
It's really
that
simple, yeah.
But he's got to win the East 1 year. We have the O-line in place. We have talent. He's recruiting well. But if we're still behind Florida and Georgia, or maybe even like if we drop down below a South Carolina or Missouri 1 year, people are going to start chirping about it. And I think he's a guy who, if there's chirping, he might would just take another job and we find somebody else. So
my personal feelings are if he doesn't win the East this year, I'd make a move. Just as a fan, I know I'm not John Curry, and John Curry's not going to do that. I think if he doesn't win the East this year, and let's say he wins 8 games, he'll probably get the 2018. If he can win the East in 2018 or 2019, preferably 2018, because I think he'd have a hard time lasting to 19. If he can win the East either this year or next year, he should be okay for a couple of years, barring a huge disaster.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if he'll be able to do that. I'm not as sure as you are, but I think so. And then my little bonus question on this little hot seat segment. Some of these guys we think are going to be gone. We think Bielema is going to be gone. We think someone's probably going to be gone. You think someone's going to be gone. We think Malzahn's pretty safe. We're differing on a few others. Any of these openings or other openings that might come in the SEC, will any of those be filled by Lane Kiffin?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I think he was in the clear until he started trashing Saban, and then Saban kind of took a couple shots at him. I think that hurt his credibility. It's going to be hard to win at Florida Atlantic. Maybe Arkansas.
I feel like that could fit.
I don't think Texas A&M would hire him. I don't think Auburn would hire him. I could maybe see an Arkansas taking a chance on him, but I don't think that would happen. It'd be interesting, though.
It would be interesting. Okay, we might as well, while we're on the topic, will any of these be filled by Les Miles?
You know, we didn't even mention Ole Miss. Yeah, I think Les Miles and Ole Miss makes a lot of sense. I really do.
Yeah, you've mentioned Les Miles or Kevin Sumlin there, and I agree with you that one of those could slide in.
Yeah, Sumlin, if Texas A&M fires someone after a 7-5-8-4 season, like I believe will happen, I think Ole Miss should immediately call someone. I think he could rebuild that program, runs a clean program, good recruiter, runs a fun offense. I think he could rebuild that. I think Les Miles could come in. Maybe you hire a big-time offense coordinator to go with him and put him as the interim tag at Ole Miss. But I don't think Arkansas or Texas A&M or Auburn would go after Les Miles.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to monitor the moving because we know these teams aren't going to stay stagnant. Speaking of, you know, programs on the move, we're going to do a little bit of a stock report. We're going to buy or sell some programs, and it's kind of the lower tier of the SEC, but still people that can make noise and play spoiler. So we're going to go through these, and I'm going to ask you whether you're buying this for the next few years or whether you're selling them and you're not exactly in on the hype. Kentucky.
I'm going to buy Kentucky. I like their identity with that spread read option. They've got a pretty solid defense. Jordan Jones is a beast. He's really good. I really think Kentucky, they haven't had a great recruiting class, but they have a quarterback. They've got Benny Snell, who's fantastic. Got some talent at wide receiver. Their offensive line should be pretty decent. I'm going to buy Kentucky stock. I think they can win 8 regular season games this year. Maybe even 9 if everything breaks right.
Yeah, so I wrote down for this year, I think I do. But I don't really have a strong sense to buy them for, say, 3 years out. But I love that running back, and he's going to be around a little while. And they have a really good young linebacker. So I think I'm leaning towards buying, but especially for this year. Mississippi State.
Can I hold it? Instead of buy or sell. I think Dan Mullen's a good coach. I don't see them winning a title anytime soon, but I don't see them collapsing either. I think last year, I know they went to a bowl, but they only had 5 wins in the regular season. Probably get back to bowl eligible. Nick Fitzgerald, I'm buying his stock. He's really good. So I'll say, I'll buy low. Let's say that.
Yeah, I'm going to buy, but I'm going to buy with the expectations that you can have for someone in the West right now. So I really like Mullen as well. I love Nick Fitzgerald. I think he's really good, and they're really going to like him there. Whenever they had their major success, people kind of forget how good that roster was. It's going to be hard for them to get back there. But Ole Miss and a little bit of trouble helps them a lot because – Nick Fitzgerald's a lot of fun to watch right now, so they're going to get some good play. I don't expect him to win the West or anything. I don't even expect him to go back to the top five like they did with Prescott. But the expectations that you can have for a Mississippi State team, I expect Mullen to get them there, so I'm buying. What about Vanderbilt?
I'm going to sell them. Don't like their quarterback play. I know Schirmer lit up Tennessee, but not buying him yet. And I think Mason, I think his ceiling is 6 or 7 wins.
Yeah, I'm going to sell them as well. But I will say I was lower on Derek Mason than I should have been. And it was, I think, just some James Franklin hangover effect. Duke can coach okay, but I don't think he's ever going to have them rolling along and upsetting teams like they did for a little while. And then finally, South Carolina.
I'm going to sell. I know Tennessee lost them. I really like Jake Bentley. Muschamp's done a better job recruiting than I thought he would do, but it's Muschamp. You just feel like there's a ceiling on him.
I actually am buying them, and I can't believe I'm saying this.
You know, you've kind of hyped them up the last couple times we've talked. Not on the podcast, but just, you know, pre-show stuff.
I mean, we know they're going to have a pretty good defense, and even though it's not going to be Florida recruiting, there's some decent players in the South that Muschamp's just going to get, and he has such a good reputation from what he did at Florida on defense. They've kind of found a quarterback. Bentley completed over 65% of his passes last year. They have a good tight end. They have the running back back. They have the top three leading wide receivers back. So they have enough back to kind of keep a little bit of that positivity going. I don't know if they're going to win an East title or anything. Again, it's South Carolina, but I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm actually kind of buying them. So the two that I'm really buying are South Carolina and Mississippi State, but not necessarily as division champions or anything.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I mean, Deebo Samuel and Jake Bentley is a really fun combination, and I still think Muschamp's a good defensive mind. It's just, with Clemson overshadowing, the recruiting's not had it like it had been in the past. It just feels like somebody's going to get pushed out. I'm more willing to buy Missouri stock. I think we'll talk about them in a minute. I'm willing to more buy their stock than South Carolina. And I already bought Kentucky stock too. So,
yeah, true. And we're not buying Vandy's. Okay. Another thing we're going to do is we're going to talk about we're going to do a little bit of quick twitch SEC focus. So we didn't do the quick twitch on the other previews. We didn't do it on the draft episode, but we're kind of back to a point where there's some really cool comparisons to make. So we're thinking about quick twitch. We're going to go through this fairly quickly. It's not going to be immediate because there's some discussion surrounding some of these. So which sophomore quarterback do you take right now? And I'm going to give you four options.
Okay.
You have Jalen Hurts. Mm-hmm. You have Jacob Eason, Shea Patterson, or the newbie who everyone's hyping, Jarrett Stidham.
Man, those are a lot of good quarterbacks.
Really good ones. And Tennessee's could be good. We just haven't seen it yet. And then Drew Locke is a junior, but he's still good. Like, there's some decent quarterback play. And Jake Bentley's a sophomore as well.
I'm going to say, man, I really like Shea Patterson. I'm going to say Eason. I think he's got, like, that throw he made against Tennessee last year. There's 7 guys in the world that could make that throw, and he's the only college football player that could have done that. Like, that's the kind of arm strength and ability he has. He can move around a little bit. I thought he was really impressive against Tennessee. He's already led a couple late drives. I think he's got all the talent in the world. I don't trust his wideouts at Georgia, and that offensive line's questionable, but I think he's going to be a first-round pick in the NFL. I take him.
Yeah, so I took Eason as well. He only completed 55% of his passes last year, which just shocked me when I saw it. But it's partly because he hasn't had a monster receiver. But I think Ridley could be good. I think Godwin, they should figure out how to use him better. He's got running backs that can catch, and he's got 2 good tight ends. And kind of the way I went and answered this question was, if you put these different guys on their respective teams on this list, who would, like, give each team the best chance to win? If Jacob Eason were the quarterback at Alabama, they would be just as good, I think.
They would have won the national title last year, actually. I love Shea Patterson. I think he's super fun to watch. He's I'm not saying he's going to be this good in college. Reminds me of Johnny Manziel. Just can move around, make plays. Like, I love, you know me, I'm a sucker for guys who wear quarterbacks who wear numbers in the 20s. So I really like Shea Patterson. I think he's going to be a rock star at Ole Miss. I know they're going to miss Hugh Freeze, but he should put up big numbers anyway.
Yeah, and then Stidham, we just don't know enough yet. So we're taking Eason, and we think that he's just a prototype, and I hope that this doesn't come to fruition, but he's really good.
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Would Jalen Hurts, and he was a highly rated recruit, do you think he's a product of the system, or do you think he's got the talent, or is it a combination of both?
I think it's really easy to make those runs that he makes when you have that much talent surrounding you. But I also think that he's an incredibly good runner. I mean, he has the straight line speed. He can shake off some tackles. He's not small. I don't think he has the arm talent. Like, I don't think he would do a great job as Georgia's quarterback this year.
If you switched him and Nick Fitzgerald, who's at Mississippi State, who's a junior, that's why he wasn't on this list. Is Alabama better?
I think so.
Okay, I got you.
And they're, I mean, similar players, I think.
I do think he has big-time talent. I think he maybe wasn't ready, but his athleticism and his size really helped him out. And he's got the best running back group in the country, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's good, but the Heisman talk was absolutely just stupid. Moving on, how many SEC teams do you think become bowl eligible? And if you have them in mind, say the ones that you think won't.
I've got 8, no Vanderbilt, no Ole Miss, no Arkansas, no South Carolina.
So I have no Vanderbilt, no Ole Miss, no Arkansas, and that's all. I think South Carolina's
going to get it. And, of course, there's not 12 SEC teams. This isn't 2009. There's 14, so 10 SEC teams will be bowl eligible.
So, yeah, I had 11. So really saying who you don't want is – or you don't think will. So we're in agreement on a few of them. I, again, oddly, weirdly, stupidly maybe, have a little bit more faith in South Carolina.
I really like Missouri, but, you know, if their defense doesn't improve, they might go 5-7 again. And I'm also – I've got Mississippi State in there because I believe in Fitzgerald. But they've got to improve defensively and find another playmaker on the outside.
Yeah, and that's one where if Fitzgerald gets dinged up and misses 6 games, well, their season's done. So, yeah, we're counting on some stuff with them. But just if their roster stays the same, Fitzgerald's good enough to get them to a bowl. Who's the best wide receiver in the SEC?
I'm going to say Calvin Ridley.
Interesting.
Who do you pick?
I'm picking Kirk.
I mean, that's not a bad pick at all. I mean, Kirk's really good, but I think Ridley takes the top off a little bit more. I trust him a little bit more on, like, some post routes and comebacks than Kirk. And so I go with Ridley there. I think Kirk, he's great. Don't get me wrong. And Ridley it's the same thing you could say for Ridley. Kirk's also a slight product of his system with that air raid attack.
He is a product of the system. And I think if you put him, like, trying to do what Ridley does, it'd be interesting to see how it worked. But the main thing with Kirk is, he might be the best returner in the country if you count punts and kick returns.
Well, that wasn't part of the question. You said who's the best wide receiver, not who's the more explosive athlete.
No, I know. But I think when you're thinking about, like, who you'd want on your team, you're allowed to put him a kick returner. Like, I'm trying to think of a good example. Like, part of the reason I thought McCaffrey was one of the best running backs was because that was an option with him, and that wasn't necessarily going to happen with, like, Bo Scarborough.
Yo, that's fair, definitely. I think another guy I would throw out there, Jamon Moore from Missouri, over 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns last year.
So if you were picking – this was actually what I was going to follow up with. After those two, who's next, Moore, or are you taking Jennings?
Jawan Jennings is a dog. I would take Moore, just the productions there a little bit. I can't believe I'm going to say it. More than Jennings at this point. But I think Jennings is an NFL starter. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, he's got the physicality to do it.
You're a big Riley Ridley fan. You like him.
I do like Riley Ridley. And I don't know if that's being painted a little bit by Calvin, but I think somebody's got to emerge, and he is the outside receiver that they need. I really think him and Eason could kind of grow together a little bit.
Screw him, but Antonio Callaway's really good too.
Yeah, I'm not even – he's a piece of crap.
Oh, and Deebo Samuel had a really good year last year at South Carolina.
Yeah, he really did. Okay, this one is like simultaneously not fun, but gets us talking about kind of the drafts we did and everything. Pick one player from another SEC team that you want to be a Vol.
Jordan Jones from Kentucky.
Okay.
Because we suck at linebacker. And he,
that's actually really good, and I probably should have done that considering how much I rate.
Isn't bad at linebacker, so he's actually really good. Yeah, I mean, he can also rush the passer too. So 109 tackles, 4 sacks, 11.5 for loss. He's the real deal. He's an NFL first-round pick.
I went with Micah Fitzpatrick.
Definitely not a bad pick there. Thought about Arden Key because we need a pass rusher.
Arden Key, yeah. So Micah just finally gives us a corner that we haven't had in a while. Yeah, I tried to look at pass rushers, and I should have looked at more linebackers actually because I really like that pick. I think yours helps us a lot. And then Micah, it's like, please give me a corner that works. But as far as like value over what we have on our roster right now, especially with Kirkland hurt, that would be such a huge addition.
I thought about Kevin Tolliver to play at corner also. It'd be really nice to have him at corner.
Okay, so we'll do the same thing we did with other conferences. Who are your favorite players in the conference? And I think that Jordan Jones is one of them, but maybe someone else.
I'm a sucker for tight ends. I love Isaac Nada. He torched Tennessee last year. Huge guy. Just a massive, massive human being. He's got, I don't think he's as good as blockers, maybe people thought he'd be, but he's the real deal over the middle tight end.
Yeah, he's one. And then mine, I've already mentioned him a couple times. I like Nick Fitzgerald a lot. He's one that gives you a good reason to watch random Mississippi State games that sometimes are on. He's really good. Yeah, Isaac Nada had 5 catches for 83 yards and a touchdown against us.
Yeah, he was fantastic. I think Jamon Moore, we talked about him. Very good player. Marcel Frazier, defensive end from Missouri. Is going to start. I think he's going to have a breakout year. Really like KJ Malone. I think he's more right tackle than left tackle in the NFL, but I think he's got a bright future. I think he's a multiple-year starter in the NFL.
And I also like Cam Petway a lot. So he was my first running back picked in our draft. I love watching him run, and he's kind of given Gus back to that, like, okay, we're just going to have 1,000-yard rushers, and there's nothing you guys can do about it. So Petway would be probably the likely guy I would want to tackle in the conference. So I love him, and I hope he beats Alabama. Who's your favorite recruit or underclassman? And again, non-Tennessee, but who's your favorite young guy in the conference?
I think Dylan Moses, freshman linebacker at Alabama, is going to be an absolute stud. I think he's going to be a pain in our side for the next 3 years.
Yeah, and he, like, you almost forget about him because they have so many dudes.
I like Leo Lewis from Mississippi State. Had 80 tackles last year as a freshman.
Yeah, really good.
Van Jefferson, wish we could have got him. He's a good player, too. Love to have him in the slot.
Yeah, I like him a lot. The one I picked, just for excitement purposes, not necessarily going to be the best, but just golly, I can't wait to see him, is Jarrett Stidham. I think that's a really exciting one.
Yeah, I definitely think he's going to be good. I think Jake Bentley, who, by the way, we should have put in our which sophomore quarterback would you take – segment. We kind of forgot about him. I think Jake Bentley's a really interesting quarterback, too. I think he's got a bright future.
Yeah, he's good. Just so much talent always in the SEC. And even though this might be a boring question, just like we did with other conferences, who do you think is going to win the SEC?
Bama.
I mean, it has to be, right?
Yeah, it's got to be. They're too good. Offensively, they're going to be great. Defensively, you know they're going to be able to replace everybody. I still don't trust their pass rush. I still don't think it's all there yet, but they should, I think, at least go undefeated in the SEC.
Well, and that's the thing is, we're doing this on Sunday, the 27th, and we're releasing it later this week, and by the time we do another one, we're going to be reviewing the first week, and they might have lost to Florida State by the time you guys hear from us again. But it doesn't matter because they can lose to Florida State and probably lose to Auburn and they'll still be in Atlanta.
Yeah, they definitely can, because it's not just Alabama is that good, but nobody in the East other than maybe Georgia could compete on their talent level at this point. Auburn and LSU both have the talent, but I don't think LSU has the offensive line or the quarterback. I don't know if Auburn has the secondary play. It just feels like also while Alabama's the king, there's no princes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so like Auburn offensively, I think could actually frustrate the hell out of them, because if Stidham's good, then I think when you're running Petway downhill, you got Kerryon Johnson, you got Kyle Davis, you got Nate Kriegmeyer. Like, they have guys that can hang, but they lost some of their pass rush guys. We don't know what their secondary is going to be like, and it just takes such a good group of guys to beat Alabama that, I mean, I don't think LSU can beat them. I do not think Tennessee can beat them. They're probably going to just continue to beat the ever-living out of Arkansas. They're going to beat Ole Miss. It's really Florida State or Auburn. And again, even if they lose those, they might be in the title game.
The one thing I think, other than an inconsistent pass rush from Bama that could take them down, is if Hurts doesn't progress. Because Alabama's got one of the top quarterback recruits in the country, and I hope I say his name right, Tua Tagovailoa. We'll just call him Tua.
Tua.
They got Tua there, who's a big-time recruit. And you wonder, even if Alabama wins, let's say they lose against Florida State, and they beat Fresno State, Colorado State, Vanderbilt, Ole Miss. If they struggle and Hurts hasn't shown the progression at that at Texas A&M game, maybe you might see Tua get a place. Maybe Hurts feels the pressure. That'll be really interesting to watch.
Yeah, that will be. And I actually think Hurts is going to be okay. And I thought that at the end of last season, people were talking about how Tua was going to come in and steal the job. I thought that was just absolutely crazy. Obviously, if he struggles, that introduces you to that possibility. But I think Hurts kind of knows what he has in those running backs. He's only, I think, going to get better in the passing game. I don't think he's going to regress. So I think he'll be okay. I actually do. I think they're still going to be good on special teams. Their secondary is one of the best in the country, maybe the best. So not a lot of holes. And we knew that. That's not news.
No, it's not. And it's probably going to stay that way for a while. Saban's, I don't see him having a backslide at all. He seems to have his crap together. So I don't see them. I don't see that happening for a while either.
Yeah, so it's Alabama, and we knew that. And I hope Florida State beats them by 40 points. But every single year when we do this podcast, I do the thing where I talk myself into the first Alabama game being a loss. This is the closest it is coming to that being reasonable.
Yeah, I agree.
But I did it last year too, and they beat USC by 46 points.
Well, I warned you of that. Although it would have been interesting if Sam Darnold had played, what could have potentially happened there. But I think definitely Florida State can get him this year. I don't think that would be – like I said, I'm not completely buying that pass rush yet. And Hurts is going to have to improve as a passer. There's no doubt about it. He's going to have to get better. He was bad as a passer in the final three games of the year.
Yeah, he was. And those three games, they only won by an average of like 30 points. So –
okay, fair enough, but you get the idea, though.
So that's the SEC. It's Alabama. Auburn's good, and then it's kind of everyone else. And we have a chance in the East, and I'm really excited. Zach is going to continue to try to talk me into that. And a week from now, we're going to know a lot more about how good Alabama looks, about what Florida looks like. So we're going to learn a lot in the next week, and we're going to come back and continually revisit some of these. And then now that we've talked about the SEC, kind of what we know best just from building up institutional knowledge over the years, we're starting to learn more about the Pac-12, and they were in the playoff scene last year. So the first question we have before we get to the other exciting teams, does Washington repeat as conference champions?
I'm going to let you answer first.
I'm going to say – let me look at the divisions real quick, and I apologize that I have to do this.
It's okay. I want to say yes.
I think I'm going to say yes, too, but I wanted to look at where they are.
See, I thought you would take – they're in the north. They're with Stanford and Oregon. I thought you would pick Stanford.
Actually, I think I am.
Okay, so you're going to go with
Stanford.
I thought
they were on the other side. I'm really bad at remembering those alignments.
Yeah, the Big Ten's the one that gets me. I can remember the Pac-12 pretty well, but the Big Ten's the one that gets me on the alignments and the ACC because it's like whatever. But, yeah, I think Washington does. Jake Browning's an absolute stud quarterback. I know they lose John Ross, but I really like Dante Pettis. They return three starters on the offensive line. They still have Vita Vea. They still got Asim Victor, who's a really good linebacker there. I am concerned about their corners. They lost Sidney Jones and Kevin King. Those are two really physical corners. So
they
that's
also
my
lost
concern.
Budda Baker.
And they lost Budda Baker, right?
Yeah.
Those are three NFL guys, so I'm concerned about that. But I think offensively, they're still really good.
So here is why, like, it's not just Stanford, and we both know how much I love Stanford. I mean, it's almost disgusting, but it's also that Oregon, Stanford, and Washington State return 16-plus starters, whereas Washington returns 13, and they're returned good ones, but they also lost a lot, which you just mentioned. Washington has the star QB, and we're going to talk about Browning in just 1 second. But really, I think that some mixture of Oregon, Stanford, and Washington State is what downs Washington. Not necessarily just head-to-head Stanford gets them, but I think having to go to Stanford and then dropping maybe one of Oregon and Washington State, they get both at home, which is nice, but I think that is what could get them. And they have to go to Colorado, which isn't super easy. They actually have a little bit of a home field advantage, and I love Chris Peterson, but maybe one of the Oregon and Washington State combo and then at Stanford might get one of those teams to the top of that division.
Yeah, having to go to Arizona State, that's not easy. Even though Arizona State had a down year, that's still not an easy game. I still think they're the best team. I still trust their defense. And I think Jake Browning's an absolute stud at quarterback. I really do. So I think it's going to be interesting to kind of see how Washington improves defensively, because they were really good defensively, but losing those three starters, that's going to be a big blow.
It really is, and Browning's going to have to be a little better because they lost John Ross as well, who was just a monster. So he's going to have to be a little better, and I guess that brings us to the question of where does Browning rank among the elite quarterbacks nationwide?
I have him in my top five or six. I mean, his numbers last year were just absolutely ridiculous, Daniel. I mean, he had a 43-9 touchdown interception ratio, completed 62% of his passes, 3,500 yards. You know, he did struggle against USC and Bama, but, man, he is really good. And he throws an absolute beautiful deep ball. He doesn't have a great arm, but that deep ball is absolutely gorgeous.
So, heading into this year, who do you have ahead of him?
Darnold.
Is that all?
I would take Francois. I know you're not a big Francois fan, but I would take Francois over him.
Man, that's crazy to me.
I mean, I think that's not even like a shot at Jake Browning, honestly. Like,
no,
I think
I
he's
know.
Super good, but I'm buying DeAndre Francois stock this year.
So, Francois, he was a freshman last year, which that matters. He was a redshirt freshman.
With a horrible offensive line.
With a horrible line, whereas Jake Browning was really comfortable, really protected, and had superstar wide receivers. But 43-9 TD interception is absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Browning's really good. Do you think he's an NFL first-round pick?
I think he will be.
He does seem like the type that you could put him in the shotgun and just kind of spread the ball out a little bit. Like, I think that would work well.
Yeah, I mean, I think he seems small. Like, he looks small mm-hmm. when he plays for some reason. But, I mean, he's bigger than Francois is the weird thing.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to watch there. I mean, I also think Luke Falk deserves some credit, some mention, too. I mean, he's going to get some NFL looks.
Exactly. When you presented this question, I was like, so where does he rank among elite quarterbacks? Darnold is like everyone loves him.
Yeah, number one pick if he stays healthy.
Yeah, but I could also just for like based on last year, not based on mock like NFL stuff, I could make a case for Browning as better than Darnold.
I think that's fair. I don't think that's a hot take or anything. I think you can make a legitimate point on that. And Darnold didn't start the first three games either. So, I mean, and I think that's very odd because he looked so good last year.
Yeah, and like, what would Darnold's numbers look like if he came out and Alabama really kicked his ass the first game? So there's some question there. I think like everyone's really sure about Darnold now, and people are a little bit hesitant on Browning, but Browning has been absolutely bonkers, and it could be that that's the best season he ever has, but I don't think the drop-off will be anything significant. Luke Falk's going to be really good still.
Luke Falk threw 633 passes, complete 70% of them.
Yeah, dude.
And I know it's air raid. I know it's Mike Leach, but that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's ridiculous no matter what. The good thing, the thing you like about Darnold is that he completed over 67% of his passes, which is pretty bananas.
And he's more athletic than Falcon Browning.
He is, and he's just bigger. So if you need to get like a first down, he's gonna truck through some guys.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
I really love Browning, but I think that he gets dropped down a little bit just because people think Washington is a little bit of a fluke, but I think he's a star. So a similar conversation that there's a lot of good guys out there. Christian McCaffrey's gone, so there's a void to fill because there's still star running backs out there. And this is back to our who are we going to be watching on late night television on Saturdays. I put Myles Gaskin, Philip Lindsay, Royce Freeman, and Ronald Jones as your four options. Who's the best running back in the Pac-12?
When he's healthy, I'm going to go with Royce Freeman because of that power and speed combination.
Yeah,
Philip Lindsay's really good, though.
He was dinged up a little bit last year, but the year before, Royce Freeman ran for over 1,800 yards, and he's 240 pounds.
Yeah, he should be an NFL starter if he can be healthy. I love his game. I think Taggart's really going to – that new offense fits Freeman better, I think, more under center style. I think Ronald Jones is really good. I think Myles Gaskin's a really good player. I love Philip Lindsay. He's really fun to watch, but I think Freeman's the best pure talent.
Yeah, Ronald Jones had the best yards per carry, so he's a little bit more explosive. It's going to be interesting to see how he fits when Darnold is the focus. It's four really good ones, though, and we even left a couple of others out that are really good.
Can I give a shout-out, actually, to Ryan Dahl at Oregon State? I watched the Oregon State-Colorado State game last week. Colorado State boat raced them, but I watched Dahl. He had 147 carries for 951 yards last year. He had a really long touchdown run last game against Colorado State. He's really good, very shifty, kind of fun to watch, can catch the ball out of the backfield. So I'm going to give him a shout-out because he was fun to watch yesterday.
And Ronald Jones is one that if you haven't like tuned in to what he can do, he's absolutely one that you want to see because he had some runs last year that were – I mean, he's shooting up NFL draft boards, and that's why he had 6.1 yards per carry. It's just a matter of if he can hold up and if he gets enough run in that system.
Yeah, the first
speaking
few years
of that system –
the first 2 years,
we're
going to
talk a little bit about. Yeah, he has, and I like him a lot. So T. Martin has really gotten it rolling with that offense. And during the draft episode, we took Darnold really early. We're talking about Ronald Jones right now. They've got some good offensive linemen. We like Deonte Burnett a lot. So T. Martin's career has been sort of weirdly related to Tennessee. We know this. But all roads are leading to him being mentioned as a head coach. And do you think he can be successful as a head coach? And given that I think I know your answer, why do you think that?
I think he can. I think he's got the resume. He's definitely the offensive coordinator. Last year, he called the plays. Helton didn't have the play sheet when they would show sideline shots. When the offense, he wasn't talking into the mic very much. So he was definitely – Martin definitely called the plays. He's been an excellent recruiter anywhere he's been. He's still young. I think he just turned 39. He did. He's got – I mean, he only played a couple years in the NFL, but he's got an NFL background there. We know what he did in college as a player. I think he's got a chance to be a really successful Power 5 head coach. I really do.
Yeah, like you pointed out to me that he has taken over the play calling. It's his offense through and through. He's really gotten it rolling. And I think that right there can make you successful as a head coach. We know he can connect with players. We know he can recruit. So he's been mentioned as a Tennessee guy before, and, I mean, we know what he means to this program. We talked about the hot seat in the SEC preview. If Butch can't win that SEC East title, he can't get us to Atlanta, and before 2020, he's not the coach anymore, which I still don't think will happen, but let's say it does. Darnold's gone. T. Martin has all the buzz. Would you want T. Martin to be in the pool of guys that we're looking at for head coach?
You'd like to see him be a head coach before, right? I know that's kind of – I mean, that's kind of a cop-out answer. If he was hired after this year, for example, and USC won the Pac-12 and Darnold is a number one pick and they lit up everybody passing-wise, I would not be upset if they took that chance, because I don't think there's a lot of elite coaches that would come to Tennessee, or I think you have just as good a chance of T. Martin being successful as any group of five coach that you hire.
Yeah, I agree with you. I wouldn't be – it would be so much pressure on him to come to Tennessee. Like, it would be just the ratio of, like, what his resume says versus what people would expect from his legacy here would be a little bit out of whack. But as far as what he's done out on that coast and what he would mean if he was successful here, I would really like for his name to be involved. I think it might be tough for the timing of things to add up. So, like, I don't think Butch is going to be gone, like, in the next couple years. And I think sometime in the next couple years, Martin either moves around or gets a head coaching job somewhere, like, I don't know, like a San Diego State or somewhere a little bigger. So I don't know how the timing works out, but if he took a job after this year and then was successful and then we were going to move on, that would actually, that might line it up.
And I think he could recruit. I really think he'd be a good recruiter. I don't think that would be an issue at all. I think something else that maybe to consider there is that John Curry came to Tennessee when T. Martin was playing. Now, I don't know if there's any interaction among them or whatnot, but there's that connection. You know John Curry's going to want to make a big splash if he had to make a move in the next year or two. And, I mean, like I said, T's young enough. He's only 39. So even if it's a couple of years down the road, I mean, I'd love to see T, you know, do exactly what you said. Take over like a Fresno State or a San Diego State, or maybe like a Southern Miss or something like that, just to make sure that he could run a program successfully. But I think if you told me I couldn't get a Power 5 head coach or an NFL offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, T. Martin would be on top of my list.
Yeah, like I think that I would want him to be included if he continues this trajectory, but he wouldn't be number one. He wouldn't be my dream guy or anything. It's going to be interesting to track, but I don't have him at the top just because I think it'd be nice to have him back. I think he's a good coach, and we should consider good coaches, basically, is the conclusion.
Well, we all know Peyton Manning's going to be the head coach anyway. T's just going to be his offense coordinator. So
that's true. That's fair.
Yeah. So moot point anyway. So
yeah, I don't know why we're even talking about this. And Gruden's going to be defensive coordinator. So the best job in the Pac-12, since we're talking about coaches moving around, USC's back kind of in the spotlight. What do you think is the best job in the Pac-12?
I'm going to surprise you. I think Oregon's the best job in the Pac-12.
I actually thought about saying the same thing.
Damn it! I'm trying to disagree with you, and you're not cooperating.
I chatted with my buddy Matthew about it and kind of presented this question to him. And we think it's USC. It's hard to match that history. They're kind of back rolling, especially if they end up as like a top 10 team this year. They have these guys going at the top of the draft again, because I think multiple guys could. But I think it's USC, and then I think the next tier is Washington and Oregon and Stanford.
Now, if you would ask me a different question, which job would you want to take over in the Pac-12 of any job, I would take Stanford, even though I don't think it's necessarily the best job.
Yeah, I think that they simultaneously face the different requirements for recruits getting in, but they've kind of capitalized on it, man. Like starting with Harbaugh and then all through Shaw, they really just get amazing kids and they just make it a national search instead of fighting for these California kids. They do an awesome job of it. And we went through their recruiting class recently, you and I, and it's like number one tackle, number two tackle, number one tight end, number one pro style QB. All right, come to Stanford and just be Stanford. And I think that is in that next tier right below maybe Oregon, maybe USC.
I think Oregon, they struggle the recruiting profile. They don't have to worry about locally. There's not many recruits, but they can go into California. They can go into Texas some. They have a style about them. It's worked. They have Phil Knight's backing. It's not a place that has increased expectations to the sense where it's outrageous. Part of the issue with USC, one, their facilities suck. They have a stadium that's a grail, I guess you could say, but it sucks, to be honest. And then the other thing is their expectations are maybe higher than people would expect. I mean, look at how Lane Kiffin, what happened to him. I mean, I think Kiffin did a pretty decent job at USC. But if you look there, like go look after John Robinson's first run to Pete Carroll, before Carroll took over, and then after Carroll, and they're not exactly the best program of all time.
Right. And then something else that's just odd about USC, thinking back to last year, this time last year, Clay Helton was not a popular guy.
They were trying to fire him after a 1-3 season. I remember Colin Cowherd, who's been a USC shill his whole career, was like, oh, they should fire Clay Helton right now. He's just not the guy.
Right, and then suddenly he went from like 5-4 to winning the Rose Bowl, and I mean, that's the goal at USC, and he's number four heading into this year. So it just kind of goes to show you how out of whack these expectations can get, and then even if you meet him, I mean, if he has a down year this year, they're going to be calling for the same thing. So
I have one more thing. I will say this. I think if you got a really good coach, like maybe even a Les Miles, like 2009, 2010 Les Miles, I think one of the Arizona schools could really be a consistently excellent program with a good football coach.
Yeah, and that could still happen because those teams have made a little bit of noise before and then just, you know, they've fallen by the wayside. But those aren't bad jobs either.
Absolutely not. I think both of those, either one. I mean, and they've had success in the last few years. Rich Rod did a good job. And then Todd Graham has had some success too.
All right, so looking at, just like we did with the other conferences, your favorite players in this conference. We'll do the young guys next, but first, who are your favorite players that in this conference?
I really like Vita Vea from Washington.
Oh, yeah.
Nasty nose tackle, can make some plays in the middle. Really like watching him. You know, he's really good. I wanted to give a shout-out Ryan Nall. I made that shout-out there. And I personally love watching Tavares Martin from Washington State. I think he's a really good wide receiver.
Yeah, I like Luke Falk a lot. I have for a couple years. Vea was a guy that I was going to say, I mean, 5 sacks last year, but to do that as like the nasty nose tackle is serious business. That's moving. I think Bryce Love is going to be really entertaining to watch this year. He lit it up against Rice last night, but I don't know how much that tells us. He averaged 7 yards per carry last year, and this offensive line has 3 seniors, and we know they can run the ball. I think the quarterback's a little bit more of a threat now, so hey, he's not going to carry McCaffrey's torch by any means, but I think he'll still be a good running back for them. And then another guy I chose that I actually drafted on my team was Quentin Meeks, who's like he's like a 6'2", 200-pound corner. He's really important to the defense, and I mentioned this on the draft episode. They didn't get to play Washington or Washington State last year with him. So the Washington blowout of Stanford last year might be a little bit different this year with a different quarterback and with Quentin Meeks in there in the secondary.
I really like Caron Crump from Arizona State. He had a really good year, had 9 sacks. He's an outside linebacker, a rushbacker. 9 sacks last year. He had a couple tackles for loss to go in there. He's kind of fun to watch in that Arden Keen mode. I think Dante Pettis has a bright future. I really like watching him. He's really shifty. He could take a ball and go 100 yards, you know, at any time.
Yeah, he's going to take over a lot of the return duties probably, and he's going to be a lot more of the focus. So as long as Browning can get him the ball, gosh, he's a good receiver. Just as dynamic, just not as straight line speed as John Ross, but just as dynamic when he has the ball in his hands. What are some of the favorite recruits or underclassmen that maybe emerged last year or might emerge this year of yours?
I like Deontay Burnett. I think he's a junior, so he's not necessarily an underclassman, but I think he's going to have a big year and emerge there. I'm kind of curious to see if Steven Montez, the sophomore quarterback from Colorado, I think he could have some success in Mike McIntyre's offense. Looked pretty good as a freshman last year.
So Burnett is a junior, but he's kind of just now going to play his second full season. He didn't play a full season his freshman year. So I think that's a really good pick. You and I have kind of been loosely on him for a while. He had a couple bigger games, and then against Penn State, he had 13 catches for 160 yards and 3 touchdowns. So him and Darnold clearly have a little bit of a thing going. N'Keal Harry for Arizona State last year as a freshman. So he's a 6'4", 220-pound receiver, and he had 60 catches. He had 5 touchdowns, 11 yards a catch, so kind of just like a red zone threat and can go up and get it. A big receiver, and we like those. And then Taylor Rapp, a safety for Washington, had 51 tackles and 4 picks as a freshman last year, and they need help in that secondary with the guys they lost to the NFL.
They definitely do. He's going to be a big factor. I'm really excited to see Darnay Holmes, big-time recruit from UCLA. He's projected to start. He was an early enrollee. I think he's going to be really interesting to watch. I think he'll get a lot of playing time there. That's going to be a guy I would watch for. And then, you know, I always like offensive linemen. You know, I'm a big offensive lineman guy. And I really am excited to see, you know, he's not an underclassman, but I want to see what the left tackle for USC, Chuma Ejogo.
He's got a great
name there. I think he'll be interesting to watch at left tackle. Got a couple starts last year, so it'll be interesting to watch him.
And then the last one I'll throw out there is Oregon's quarterback, Justin Herbert.
A lot of good quarterbacks in this conference.
Yeah, there really are, and few of them are young. Herbert's 6'6", 225. He didn't start the season last year. He came in later. He threw 19 touchdowns, 4 picks. And I think the most impressive one was when he went to Utah, which we know that can be a hostile environment. We know Oregon was kind of struggling last year. At Utah last year, he threw 3 touchdowns, ran for another, and didn't have a single turnover, and completed 70% of his passes against Utah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, and they're going to need him. They need to find the quarterback after a couple of FCS transfers. I'm sorry. So that'll be really interesting to watch there. A lot of good quarterbacks in the Pac-12. Like, there's out of the 12, there's probably 8 that, I mean, Keller Christ is really good too at Stanford. We haven't mentioned him at all.
Yeah, Keller Christ, I mean, he won last night. Again, you don't learn much from that, but he hasn't lost as a starter. So since he took over, they've been kind of a little bit of a different team. And then, yeah, like Justin Herbert, if he's the 4th or 5th best guy in the conference, I mean, Taggart needs him to be that, but that's pretty impressive. This is an exciting conference, and even though Washington was so good last year, I think USC at number 4 kind of overdoes how far they are from the rest of the pack. So I think this is going to be a really competitive conference.
Yeah, it is. There were 2 other guys I wanted to mention that we briefly talked about them. It was 2 Stanford offensive linemen, both 5-star. And they have Stanford offensive linemen names, Forrest Serrell and Walker Little,
who
might not play a lot the first couple of years, but you know those guys are going to be good.
Yeah, you know that they're going to redshirt them if they can, but we're going to be probably in a couple years talking about how those guys are ready to have Stanford rolling.
Yeah, mean offensive linemen. That's what Stanford loves.
Pretty much. And then this isn't I think last night Dalton Schultz, that senior tight end for Stanford, I mean, again, it's Rice, but he was just doing whatever he wanted. Like, he was lining up in the slot. He caught a touchdown early on. He was sort of just having his way with whoever was – guarding him, which I thought was kind of funny, but it's good to see him emerge, kind of get something going with Keller Christ.
Yeah, they have another big tight end at Colby Parkinson's, who is a highly rated guy. So they're a guy that having him and Schultz, that should be a really fun 1-2 punch there. I love watching Stanford's offense when it's rolling.
Yeah, and they play. Do they play someone big early? I might be misremembering.
They play at USC second week of the season.
Yes, September 9th. So that second week of the season, Stanford at USC, that's a monster game right off the bat. So that's going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah, big game. Game day, I bet, will be at that game, probably. So.
Or they'll be here.
Huh?
It's also Oklahoma, Ohio State.
Oh, they'll be in Columbus. I'll get back. Nice couple opening games. Georgia plays Notre Dame, too. So a lot of fun there.
Yeah.
All right, we kind of started off, but are we ready to pick a conference here or pick a conference champ? I've said Washington. Are you going to stick with Stanford?
I'm going to pick Stanford, and it's just a homer pick. It's what I want to see. But for a team that's ranked 14th in the country and has the quarterback situation maybe figured out, I think it might be – they're not getting talked about like they're the number 14 team in the country. So I think they could get in that conference title game, and if they do, I think they can win.
I think that's fair. That Washington-Stanford game is going to be something else. That could be a big top 10 matchup there. I think USC has a very clear path. If they can beat Stanford, I think they're in the clear. I think that USC-Stanford game will decide the season, and I don't think Stanford plays Washington. Actually, they do. I was right. Took me a second. Okay. Anyway, sorry. I think Stanford and USC is going to be really interesting to watch that game. I think the winner of that game probably wins the Pac-12 South. But, I mean, USC only returns 10 starters.
Like, that's the thing, is they got a lot of hype because of Darnold, but yeah, there's some stuff missing there.
There is. I mean, yeah, they've got a really fun team. Don't get me wrong. I think Darnold's a stud. Ronald Jones is really good. They have a great offense. You know, they have a great linebacker in Cameron Smith. But, I mean, they're more star power than depth. They've got to replace three offensive linemen. They got to replace three starters at wide receiver. They got to replace four of their top six on the defensive line. It's like not a given.
It's not a given, but the one thing they benefit a lot from is they play Stanford at home. They have to go to Washington State, but they don't play Oregon. They don't play Washington, and they get Utah at home as well. That's as easy of a schedule as you can ask for in the Pac-12.
Yeah, it is. Now, this might not affect the Pac-12 race itself. They also have to go – well, they don't have to go, but they get to play Texas. That could be interesting. I mean, I think USC is better than Texas, but Tom Herman's known for top 25 games.
Yeah, so that's a huge matchup, and that's right after Stanford without a bye. But really, that schedule's pretty freaking easy.
Yeah, it is, because, you know, Stanford has to play Washington.
And Oregon.
So, I mean, that's a good point. I think that's a fair point there. You know, just kind of looking at USC and everything, too, they're in the easier division. I think the North is tougher. So, it's going to be interesting to see if USC... I mean, they should have it pretty easy. Colorado surprised everybody last year, but I think a lot of people are expecting them. They lost a lot on defense and lost Jim Leavitt, their defensive coordinator.
Yeah, and I mean, the North has produced the last six champions. So what I'm really thinking is that USC rolls through and they're in the title game, but one of those teams from the North could still beat them in that title game.
Definitely, I agree. They could go in 11-1. And be undefeated or have one loss in the Pac-12 and play like a 9-3 Stanford or a 9-3 Washington and lose.
They
definitely possible.
Could, for sure.
So that could definitely happen. But I still think Washington's the best team in the Pac-12.
Yep. It's going to be interesting, and it's crazy how different the schedules are, but that's just kind of how it falls sometimes. We're going to get to see these games early. We're going to see good matchups early. We already saw Stanford. Again, the running backs look great, but they were playing kind of a nobody team. And the next game they play is against USC. So there will be a big wake-up call there. We'll see how good they really are. And in 6 days, we're going to see how good Florida State and Alabama are.
Are you ready for college football, Daniel? Because I am.
I am so excited. And just knowing that like a week from now, we'll know a little bit more. Virginia Tech, West Virginia is next Sunday. And then the Vols get like kind of Monday night to themselves, which hopefully turns out to be a good thing. I'm really excited.
There's another good game Sunday night. I can't think of it, but there's two good games Sunday night.
That's Texas A&M UCLA.
Thank you. Yep, that's the other one. Great opening weekend. That second weekend's going to be good. We already talked about three big games that weekend. It's just going to be really interesting. So the schedule right now is we're going to do a Tennessee preview next Sunday, and I'm going to release it Sunday morning, and then we'll do predictions. We'll go game by game. We'll do our Georgia Tech predictions. Hopefully nothing else crazy happens. We know Kirkland's out, but I guess we should do this real quick. So we've picked our conference winners, okay? Which conference winner do you think has the biggest chance to be left out? Or maybe Ohio State gets in because they draw more ratings instead of Penn State.
Yeah. Which conference winner? I think it could end up being from the Pac-12.
You know, I was thinking the same thing. I could see Washington being 10-2 and still, you know, maybe losing to USC and like Stanford, but still getting in and winning and taking away from USC.
Yeah, so I think it could be something like that. And USC, again, has some questions, so maybe they don't run through that easy schedule and don't get in. But even last year when Washington was clearly on that level, there was a lot of talk of how they shouldn't be in. So maybe the Pac-12 gets left out. Even if Stanford or even if USC runs through that schedule undefeated, people are going to look at that schedule and realize that it's not that great. So it's so hard to know what a schedule is going to look like as far as strength of schedule at the beginning of the year. But right now, if USC drops a game and then someone, like you said, a Washington with two losses in a tough North Division beats them, Pac-12 might get left out.
The ACC could get unlucky if Clemson or Florida State drops their SEC opponent and loses another one but still wins the conference.
Yeah, because Auburn and Alabama play those two, and mm-hmm. that could be a possibility.
I think the Big Ten's guaranteed. Unless Ohio State loses to Oklahoma, which I don't see happening.
I don't think that'll happen either, especially not in Columbus.
And I'm pretty confident Alabama's going to get in. So I think it's going to be between the Big 12, the Pac-12, and the ACC.
I actually agree with you. And then, that Stanford-USC game being so early is like exciting, but it could really throw some things off.
Yeah, it could. And who knows? I don't think it'll happen, but maybe Notre Dame bounces back. They still have a high talent level. So that could be a monkey wrench because you know if they only have one loss and there's not four undefeated teams, Notre Dame's getting in.
Yeah, they're going to have more than one loss.
I know, but still.
But they could play spoiler because they play some important teams.
They play Stanford. They play Georgia. They play
Miami.
They play they don't play Michigan this year. Yeah, they could definitely play spoiler, though. I mean, you're right. They play Clemson this year, I think?
No, they don't.
No, they don't. You're right. They played them last year. So, yeah. So, I mean, that'll be interesting, too.
Yep. I'm ready for it to get started. I really am. This week's, it's going to be tough to focus this week.
It will be. It's going to be a long week. Ohio State and Indiana play Thursday. Big game. Should be a lot of fun. I think it'll be a high-powered offense there. So, it's going to be great. College football's great. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, so Thursday, there's Tulsa, Oklahoma State, and then at 8 o'clock on ESPN, there's Ohio State, Indiana. I'm going to one of my buddies' house to watch it. Ohio State should just take care of business, but it's still going to be interesting, and it still gets us college football. And then Washington plays Friday, and then Saturday is really the big slate.
Quick prediction. Who wins the Heisman?
Who wins the Heisman? Who wins? I'm afraid it'll be – no, that's not true. Who wins the Heisman? I think it could be Jalen Hurts.
I think JT Barrett or Baker Mayfield, one of those two.
Baker could, especially – I mean, he acted like an idiot this offseason, which can somehow hurt or help you. But if Alabama goes undefeated, I really think it could be Hurts. People wanted to give it to him last year, for God's sake.
Definitely could. I mean, I could see that too. Saquon
Barkley could.
Barkley definitely can. Francois, I think if he has a big year and they go undefeated, beat Alabama first week, take down Clemson, I think he'll definitely get in New York.
Yeah, he'll be there for sure. And then, I mean, Lamar could do the same thing, but they're going to have to be a little better than I think they'll be.
I got another one for you. How about this? If a defensive player goes to New York this year for the Heisman ceremony, it will be...
A defensive player. I think it will be... Dexter Lawrence.
That is a good pick, I'm all in on Dexter Lawrence.
I don't think Oliver could get there, even if he does the same thing. Lawrence, with the help of like Christian Wilkins and Cleveland Farrell getting attention, he could really emerge. And he's just like that big dude. He had the monster championship game, so people will already be talking about him. He's on the radar, which I think you have to be.
Yeah, I think Minkah Fitzpatrick could be up there.
I was actually about to say
that. If he has seven or eight picks and returns a couple, he'll get some talk.
Yeah, he really will. And he also makes a lot of tackles. Yeah. So that could be another one.
Derwin,
yeah.
I don't think there's really anyone else I could really think of that would have a chance.
No, I mean, there's obviously really good players, but...
Yeah, there's not any great defensive returners either. Like, that's off the top of my head.
No, there's really not. I mean, Cameron Smith is dynamic enough, but I don't think he... I just don't see it. Because, yeah. I mean, he wouldn't even be the biggest favorite on his own team.
No, he wouldn't. But I think Baker or Barrett win the Heisman this year. That's my prediction. And I think Alabama will win the title.
Freaking Alabama.
Alabama or Florida State. Whoever wins, I think... You know what? Screw it. Screw Alabama. I'm going to say Florida State wins the national title.
I hope. That would mean they're going to win Saturday, so that would be awesome.
We might get a championship rematch this year.
3 years in a row?
Well, no, not Alabama-Clemson. Alabama-Florida State could play first game of the year and then mean the national title.
Oh, I see. That's entirely possible.
Yeah, definitely. So, all right, we're rambling, Daniel. We got it under a minute, an hour 30, though. So we did a good job again. We're starting to manage our time better.
All right, so we'll post these throughout the week. We'll be ready to go. On Saturday, we'll review whatever has happened, and hopefully it's a little bit chaotic for us. And then we'll preview Tennessee.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy your week. College football's back. It's going to be awesome.